Well, I'd like to thank all the organizers for inviting me to this beautiful place. My friends in quantum gravity come here all the time, but for me it's the first time. Okay, I have been asked to give an introductory talk. There will be no new results in this. And of course, it is much more material than I can hope to cover. For that reason, I have given two references on the archive. Both papers have been published, but here they are easily available. The first one is a general review paper on tensor categories and related stuff, and the second one more specifically on modular categories and the Witt group. So it's exactly a long version of the talk I'll give you today. Okay, thankfully, Caesar has already defined what a tensor category is. I think it is. So I can skip over that. Let me remind you what a symmetric tensor category is. It means that for all objects x and y, we have an isomorphism from x tensor y to y tensor x. And we have formulae expressing C of x comma y tensor z in terms of C of x y and C of x z. I don't want to write down the precise formulae. And there is a similar formula when the tensor product is on the left. But that is actually redundant because in a symmetric category, we have this identity. If we apply the symmetry twice, we get the identity, and in terms of a picture, that amounts to this, permuting two things twice. Okay, now this notion is pretty old. It goes back to the 60s, and of course, countless examples come to mind immediately. The category of sets, the category of vector spaces over any field, and so on. Let's do something more interesting. Braided tensor categories. They are from the 1980s, and what you do is you just erase the last identity. That means that you really need to impose two hexagon identities, but apart from that, you really drop one axiom. And in terms of pictures, it amounts to replacing a crossing by something like this, and then you have to distinguish between two braidings. So if this is CXY, then this would be CYX inverse. And this is what I call C tilde XY. So if you have a braiding and replace it by C tilde, you get another braiding. And these two braidings are equal if and only if the category is symmetric. So what we have now is a sort of hierarchy of things, namely categories, tensor categories, braided tensor categories, which I will always abbreviate, and symmetric tensor categories. And as you go down in this table, you add one piece of structure, namely a tensor product and then a braiding. But in the last step, you only add an equation, an axiom, but not new structure. Of course, all this is well known. This is the situation of one categories, but you can also look at zero categories, which are sets. And there you have a similar diagram, namely ordinary sets. And then as you go down, you have monoids. A monoid is a set with an associative multiplication and a unit. So like a group, but you don't impose inverses. And then you have commutative monoids. And here you have the same. Going from sets to monoids, you have more structure. But then in the last step, you have only one more axiom. OK, now in this situation, of course, a group or a monoid has a center. And that I would call Z1. And that is just the elements of the monoid that commute with everything. This is well known. But you can also say what the center of a set is. and this I would call Z0. And if S is a set, then its center is just the set of all maps from S to S. Yeah, that's another set, and maps can be composed. So this is a monoid, and the unit would be the identity map. Yeah, so by this definition, you create a piece of structure, namely the monoid structure. Now, this is sort of obvious, but you can do similar things with categories. Now, I should try to use curly Z's, but from now on, I will only use these. So if C is a category, then its center is the set of all functors. I will talk about sets, even though that might be a class. Now, functors can be composed. But between functors, you have natural transformations. And therefore, this is a category. And in fact, it is a tensor category. So we have a structure leading us from categories to tensor categories. And that, I call Z0. Yeah? This is a strict tensor category because composition of functors is strict on the nose. OK, now if C is a braided tensor category, you can define its center, which I use to call C2 of C. This is the full subcategory of C with objects, the x in C, or objects in C, such that CYX, CXY is the identity of XY for all objects Y. Now, of course, if you have a braided category, defining its center by imposing commutativity doesn't make sense because things commute anyway up to isomorphism. But you can impose a stronger form of commutativity, and that is exactly this identity, which holds automatically in a symmetric category. I hope you know what a full subcategory is. We choose a subset of objects, but then between these objects, we take all the morphisms of the bigger category. Yeah? Now, this is automatically a symmetric category. That is quite clear from this requirement. And it is true that Z equals its center if and only if C is a symmetric category in the first place. So here we have Z2, which again is pretty natural. But then you would want to have another construction here. And that is the most non-trivial one of the bunch. And of course, it has been mentioned before, namely C1, that's the Drinfeld center. It has been mentioned very briefly by Caesar. So if C is a tensor category, then you produce a braided tensor category. And of course, it may be that the given category admits no braiding at all. So you can't just choose a braiding. You must somehow do something non-trivial. OK, the objects of this thing are pairs x, ex, where x is an object in C, and ex is a half braiding for x. And that means it's actually a family of maps. Namely, for every object y, you have an isomorphism from x tensor y to y tensor x. And this family is natural with respect to the variable y. So if you have morphisms between y and y prime, a morphism S between y and y prime, there is an identity satisfied by ex of y and ex of y prime. OK? And we also impose that ex of z1 tensor z2 satisfies an identity, which exactly mirrors one of the two axioms in a braided tensor category. Yeah? So if you want to exchange an object x with a tensor product of two objects, this isomorphism can be expressed in terms of these two. Yeah? It's the thing given by the two different interpretations of this diagram. OK, these are the objects. And the morphisms in this thing between two such things, they are the morphisms in the old category C from X to Y, but not all of them. You only take those that are compatible with the half gradings. So, and that is such a thing and this should be true for all z, where here you have the half-braiding ex of z composed. My morphisms go from down, from bottom to top, and here you have e y of z. So this is a subset of HOM c x y. Okay, and this defines a category. But we want a tensor category, so we have to define a tensor product. And that is by definition this. This is the ordinary tensor product, and we define ex tensor y of z. Well, in terms of such a picture, so this is a function of ex of z and ey of z. And again, the expression is just to be read off from that picture. Okay, you need a unit object. And this is a tensor category. I'm a bit sloppy about associativity, so assume the category C was strict to begin with. And we want a braiding. And by definition, this is just E x of y. Now, this is the half braiding associated with x computed for y. And that this is pretty unsymmetric, but it works out miraculously, or not so miraculously. The naturality and the two hexagon axioms, they come from the axioms imposed either on the objects or on the morphisms and the tensor product. Okay. Yes?
Can there be more than one Prüfel center? I guess there could be, right?
No. No, this is well and uniquely defined.
Okay, so you can have two different, you can have two pairs in which you have the same object.
Sure, 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 most definitely, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's the definition, and you can verify with some work that it is a braided tensor category. Now, if we go back to our set theoretic construction here, you easily see that Z1 of Z2 of any set is only the identity map of that set. Yeah, if you have a function from a set to itself that is not the identity, you can find a second one that doesn't commute with the first one. And you can ask whether the same is true in this categorical setting. And in fact, for any tensor category, you can show that Z1 of Z0 of C is trivial. I don't want to go into that. I'm more interested in Z2 of Z1 of something. So question, Z2 of Z1 of C trivial? And well, the answer is yes, for certain C. And this I proved more than 10 years ago. Okay. But. Sorry? Well, for. I proved it for spherical fusion categories C with dim C non-zero. And then it has been generalized to fusion categories with non-zero dimensions by Ettinghoff, Nikšić, and Ostrich. Okay, now I mentioned already spherical structures. I don't want to invest any time on this. We have seen in Caesar's talk what left and right duals are. Now, an object can have left and right duals, but these two can fail to be isomorphic. In a braided category, it can't happen. And duals are always unique up to isomorphism. And you can talk now about pivotal and spherical categories. where you impose stronger axioms than just the existence of duals. And in particular, in pivotal categories, you can define traces of morphisms. But a morphism can have different left and right traces. In spherical categories, that's not the case. OK. I mean, these definitions can be found in detail in my two survey papers or any number of other references. But I don't want to spend my time on this. OK. Now, of course, as we have seen before, symmetric categories are a... Did I want to do this? Yeah, here. Symmetric categories are an extreme case of braided tensor categories, namely a braided category that coincides with its own center. So the center is maximal. You could ask for the opposite extreme, having minimal center. Yeah? But what does that exactly mean? If C is a braided tensor category, then Z2 of C, actually, I call this thing the symmetric center. Some people call it the Müger center, which I dislike. I think it should be called the Rehren center, since Rehren was the first to ever talk about this. But anyway. Okay. This always contains the tensor unit and all objects isomorphic to it, but also direct sums of that object and isomorphic ones. And finite direct sums. So what does it mean to say that the center is minimal? Well, I only want to define that in the semi-simple case. If C is semi-simple, but otherwise arbitrary braided tensor category, it is called non-degenerate. If C2 of C only or precisely consists of multiple.
What is a direct sum?
Well, okay, I should have said at least a few words about K-linear categories, additive categories, and so on.
Okay.
In an additive category, you can talk about the direct sum of objects. And my categories will always be K-linear over some field, and mostly characteristic zero. But most of the results work for any field of characteristic zero algebraically closed. Of course, you can think of the complex numbers. Okay, so this is a non-degenerate category. And a modular category, this notion is due to Turayev, is a spherical braided fusion categories, braided fusion category that is non-degenerate. So I haven't said what fusion category means, but it means precisely that we have two-sided duals. The category is semi-simple and has finitely many simple objects, and the unit should be irreducible, the standard axioms. Now, much of what I will talk about can be done also if you omit the spherical structure. My Russian friends, Lixich, Ostrek, and others like to do that. I somehow feel better with that additional assumption, and the difference is not that clear. Okay, so these are the modular categories. Now, if you drop the non-degeneracy, you can call these categories pre-modular, as some people do, but you can also just call them braided fusion categories. Now, why are modular categories important? I don't want to write this down. I think most of you know that. A modular category can be used to define a three-manifold invariant, or more generally, a three-dimensional DQFT. So it has topological applications. Conformal field theory, if you have a rational conformal field theory, you get a modular category as a representation category, as has been proved in various ways. Hopf algebras, of course, can give you modular categories, but only if the Hopf quasi-triangular structure has certain property, like factorizable, and so on. Now, it is clear that modular categories are the opposite extreme with respect to spherical categories, to symmetric categories. You have minimal center. And important modular categories and symmetric ones, so the two in extreme cases are relevant for the classification of all braided fusion categories. So if you understand these two cases, you have gone a long way in classifying all braided fusion categories. Why is that? Well, this is a symmetric category, and as you have heard before, modulo technicalities, that is the representation category of a finite group. Now you can turn your non-modular braided category into a modular one. This is called modularization. And then this finite group appears as a group acting on the modular categories. So classifying braided fusion categories is essentially the same as classifying modular categories together with a finite group action. Okay. Now, module categories, a few words about module categories. Tensor categories are sort of a categorification of algebras and rings. Now, an algebra has modules, so it can act on a vector space or an abelian group or whatever, and a similar thing is true for tensor categories. If C is a tensor category, a C module category, which is just a category M, together with a tensor functor or a monoidal functor from C to Z0 of M. Yeah, Z0 of M, by definition, is the set of all functors from M to itself. So you could also call it end M. So it is just a monoidal functor from C to the endo functors of some category. And as with algebras and rings, you can reformulate this in terms of bifunctors from C tensor M to M, yeah? Where this is the thing that acts on some object of M and you get a new object of M. But this is the more concise definition because you can read off everything from that. Now, I will actually not talk much about module categories, but rather about algebras and their modules, and these two things are very closely related. So if C is a tensor category, and again, let's assume strictness for simplicity, an algebra in C is a triple A M eta, where A is an object, M is a morphism from A tensor A to A, and eta is a morphism from the identity to A, and they satisfy two axioms which precisely mirror the axioms for an ordinary algebra. So M should be associative and eta should be the unit for that multiplication. Okay, now if you have an algebra, then of course you can talk about, well, perhaps one more thing. If C is braided, an algebra AM eta is commutative if the composition of M with the braiding is M. So in terms of a picture, it would be this. This makes sense in a braided or in a symmetric category. Now, if A is an algebra in C, then an A module is a pair X mu, where X again is an object in C, and mu is a morphism from A tensor X to X. This is the action, and it should satisfy an associativity of that form. If you act twice, then this should be the same as first multiplying in the algebra and then acting. So here we have AAX, this is M, and this is mu twice. And the unit eta should act trivially. Okay, now you can define morphisms between algebras. These are just, if X and X prime are modules, then the morphisms between these modules are all morphisms from X to X prime, which are compatible with the two actions. So we can define A mod C, that is the A modules in C, and that's a category. Of course, we would like a tensor category, so we would need to define a tensor product of two morphism modules. Well, that works only if C is braided. Then, and A is commutative. We need both properties. And commutativity can be defined in a braided category. Then A mod C is a tensor category. And the tensor structure is essentially defined as you do it in ordinary algebra. Namely, you look at if you have two things, X mu and mu, two modules, then the new one, well, first you define X tensor X prime, and you have two different ways of acting on that by A, namely like this, or using the braiding like this. And you take the difference of that morphisms, which you can do in an additive category, and then you take the quotient which annihilates this difference, so it's a co-equalizer, and then you get this category. Now, you can ask whether that category is braided. If C is symmetric and A is commutative, then A mod C is, again, symmetric. That's very nice. But this fails in a modular in a braided category in general. It is true if A is commutative algebra in a braided category and A is in the center of the category, so it commutes with everything in the sense that I defined before, then in fact A mod C is braided. But this assumption is too strong, yeah? So this is not tremendously useful. But there is something you can do about it. You can look at a certain subcategory of the category of all modules, and that will always be braided. And luckily, we have a third board. This is fixed, OK. So let C be braided, A commutative algebra. Then I say an A module X mu is dyslexic, rather strange name, but well, anyway, if this is true, here you have the module action where A and X go in, and if you compose that with one braiding, you get the same as if you compose it with the other braiding. Or, of course, that's the same as saying that if you put a double braiding here, you get the thing back. And now, the fact these things form a full subcategory, so A mod C, and now I put a zero here. This is a full subcategory of dyslexic modules. And this thing is braided. This is very nice. This was first discovered by Pareiges with motivations that I don't know. He was way before other people rediscovered this. OK, I should have said one word about the relation between module categories and categories of modules. Yeah? If you have an algebra in a tensor category, you have a category of modules. And that actually is a module category. So if C is a tensor category and A is an algebra, then the category of modules, which of course is only a category and not a tensor category, is a right C module category. And why is that? If I have a left, I didn't use that before, A module, and an object Y in C, then I can take the tensor product of X and Y, and then I tensor the module action with the identity morphism of Y, and this is again an A module. Yeah? And similarly, if you have a right module over an algebra, the category of right modules is a left C module category. Okay, so the categories of modules of an algebra, they are automatically module categories, and the converse is also true, but only under assumptions. So if C is a fusion category, and M is a fusion module category over C, then there is an algebra A in C such that M is, let's say, the right A module category. This is due to Ostrich. This algebra is by no means unique because non-isomorphic algebras can have equivalent representation categories. That's a phenomenon of Morita equivalence. So module categories and categories of modules are the same thing if you are in the fusion category set. I think you need some assumption on the module category. I mean, this could be huge with infinite direct sums or whatever. And then, of course, this can't be true. But it's a weak assumption. Okay, and all this, of course, doesn't assume braidings and so on. Okay, so now I should finally say a bit more about modular categories. As I said before, modular categories are a nice extreme case of braided categories. In the fusion setting, you have trivial center. And I mentioned, without writing it down, some situations where they arise or are useful. Why are they called modular categories? Well, a modular category C gives rise to a finite dimensional representation of SL2Z, which is the modular group. And this is one reason why these things are called modular categories. Now, I mentioned before, modular categories can be used to define TQFDs. And the modular group happens to be the mapping class group of the torus. And that gives a deeper interpretation of this representation. But again, I don't want to say more about this. In conformal field theory, this representation of the modular group has a direct physical interpretation. I'm not sure whether that is the case if you are talking about TQFDs in a condensed matter setting, whether there is any reasonable interpretation of that representation. Anyway, let's do some structural theory of modular categories. Let C be a braided tensor category, and D some subcategory, full or not. Then I define a centralizer, which one should best call C Z of D. So that is just C for centralizer. That's the ambient category C, and that's the subcategory. This is a full subcategory with objects, precisely those x in C, that commute with all objects in D. So CYX, CXY, no, is the identity for all y, but now only in the subcategory, not in the big category. So this generalizes the symmetric center of a braided category. So that would just be CC of C. Now, it is easy to see that this centralizer is a braided category. And that is nice. Now, but then one has a theorem. If C is modular, So it's a braided fusion category that is non-degenerate in the sense that I said, namely having trivial center. And D is a replete full tensor subcategory. Now, full, I explained, and replete just means that if you have an object in the subcategory, then anything isomorphic to it is also in it. Then, and to state this, it is easier if I call this the centralizer, just D prime. Of course, here you don't see what the ambient category is, but it makes this statement nicer. Namely, if you take, if you have a tensor subcategory and take its centralizer twice, then you get that category back. And here you see why I required this thing to be replete, because that is automatically true for the centralizer of anything. Okay, and dim C equals dim D times dim D prime. Well, I haven't defined the definition, the dimensions before. The dimension of a fusion category is the sum over the dimensions of the simple objects. You choose one for every class of isomorphism class of simple objects, and you define this to be the dimension, and the dimension is the trace of it x defined using the spherical structure. So this is rather nice. Now, what follows from this very easily is that if D, the subcategory, is modular, then also D prime is modular. Because modularity just means that D intersected D prime is trivial. But if you take the center of D prime, that is D prime intersected D double prime, but because of this, that is just D intersected with D prime. And you have more. I hope you can still read this. C is just as a braided tensor category, the direct product of D and D prime. Now, this is what some people call the Deligne product. It's just the direct product of two fusion categories. So whenever a modular category has a full modular subcategory, you are automatically in a direct product situation. This is much nicer than in the symmetric situation, because their subcategories, full subcategories, correspond to quotient groups, and of course, they don't need to be direct factors. Okay.
In case not modular, can you write something like that with a tensor product or the same product?
Yeah, I think you can do some relative tensor product. I never worked it out. I could imagine that some other people did. I'm pretty sure it is true. So, as I mentioned before, the Drienfeld center of a tensor category is a braided tensor category, and this works without any technical assumptions whatsoever. It works for any tensor category. But then there is a theorem which I've proved long ago. I think I mentioned it. If C is braided fusion and dim C is non-zero, the dimension can be zero for a non-trivial category, for example, the representation category of a Hopf algebra if the characteristic divides the dimension of the algebra, but we assume this not to happen. Then Z1 of C, the Drienfeld center, is modular. So what does this mean? First of all, it is braided by definition, but it is semi-simple. That's the first thing you need to prove. And the braided structure on this thing is non-degenerate. And you also prove a statement about the dimensions, namely the dimension of the center is just dim C squared. And it can't be anything else, because if H is a finite dimensional Hopf algebra, then it is known, and has been known for a long time, that the Drienfeld center of the module category of H is the module category over the Drienfeld center. And of course, this has the square of the dimension of H, and the categories have the dimension of the algebra as categorical dimensions. So this must be true in order to be consistent here, but you prove it for all radial fusion categories. So this modularity means precisely that Z2 of Z1 of C is trivial. Yeah? So it seems that whenever you take the center of something, of another center, you get something trivial. I would expect this to be true in a higher categorical setting, but no such thing has been proven yet. Okay, now, what if C is already braided? Of course, the definition of the Greenfeld center doesn't take into account at all whether C has a braiding or not. But if C has a braiding, then you can produce a braided tensor functor from C to the center. Namely, if X is in C, you define f of X to be X EX, where EX of Z or Y is just the braiding of X and Y. Now, it is very easy to see that this is an object in the center, and f from C to Z1 of C is a braided tensor functor. And it's actually full. In other words, C embeds into Z1 of C. Yeah, and you have that functor. Okay, but you can also let me call this F1. You can also define F2 by saying that you're, instead of the braiding, you use C tilde XY. Now that's the braiding where you switch upper and lower line. Now F2 is a braided tensor functor, but not from C, rather from C tilde to Z1 of C. And C tilde is just C with the braiding replaced by the opposite one. Now, so you have two embeddings here. So you have two subcategories. And the fact is that the centralizer of F1 of C, no, the centralizer of F1 of C in the Greenfeld center is precisely, and this is really an identity, F2 of C tilde. And vice versa. So the images of these two categories are each other's commutants. And if C is already modular, not just braided, well, then this gives you a modular subcategory of a modular category, and therefore it must be a direct factor. And then these two things, then C, Z1 of C really is F1 of C direct product, F2 of C tilde. And of course, we can just write C times C tilde. So if the Greenfeld center of a modular category is just the modular category direct product, it's opposite. Okay. Yeah?
Sorry, on the top of this board, you wrote if C is braided fusion.
Yes.
To be braided, or can
I just use terribly sorry. I'm terribly sorry. For that part of the theorem, you don't need braided. Yeah? Yeah? The Greenfeld center of a fusion category is braided by construction. You prove that it is fusion and that it is non-degenerate.
Do you need spherical or just fusion?
I proved it for spherical. That's what I did. And then Eiting of Nikšić-Ostrich dropped the spherical. Okay, so now I have exhausted all balls and will have to erase. Unfortunately, this means redistributing the chalk. Okay, so after all these preparations, we can actually do something interesting. The Greenfeld center of a fusion category is a modular category, but not every modular category is the Greenfeld center of a fusion category. So when is a modular category the Greenfeld center of some fusion category? This is, of course, a very important question. And then there is a theorem. It appears in a paper of mine with Davidov, Nikšić, and Ostrich. Let me just abbreviate. This is the case if and only if C contains a commutative algebra and here I should add a technical condition that I omitted all the time. It should be a special Frobenius algebra, or I should be an et al. Algebra or separable or whatever. It's a technical condition such that the module category, okay, the algebra is called A mod C0, that's the subcategory of dyslexic modules, is trivial. And by trivial, I mean equivalent to the category of vector spaces. The category has only one simple object. Yeah? So the Drinfeld centers are precisely those that admit such an algebra.
And the dimension.
Hmm?
And the dimension of the algebra.
No, well, that is the condition.
Oh.
Yeah? This also means that the dimension of that algebra is maximal, at least in a characteristic zero situation. The algebra, that such an algebra exists, was already in my old papers, but I didn't prove that it is commutative and not this condition. So that also gives us a characterization. And if this is the case, so if we have such an algebra, then you can write C as Z1 of D, where D is A mod, the category of A modules, but now all modules and not only the dyslexic ones. So this is a tensor category. It has no reason to be braided. And then you have this. Of course, there may be different algebras for which this is true, but this reflects the fact that inequivalent categories can have the same Drinfeld center. This leads into Morita equivalence of tensor categories, but I don't want to go into that. So we have a characterization. And now I should really say in a few words what the Witt group is, since my time is theoretically out in 3 minutes. Definition. Okay, we would like to classify all modular categories, but this is really hopeless since the Drinfeld center of a fusion category is a modular category and there are simply too many fusion categories to classify. Even if you consider them modulo Morita equivalents, there is just no hope. So what we do is we consider all these categories as trivial. This is the radical approach. But modular categories C1, C2 are called equivalent, and we need a name, and we call that Witt equivalent, if there are fusion categories D1 and D2, such that C1, direct product, Z1 of D1, is equivalent to Z2, Z1 of D2. So they become equivalent as braided tensor categories upon tensoring with certain Drinfeld centers. Yeah? So if there exist fusion categories D1 and D2, such that this is true, then we call the modular categories Witt equivalent.
Is the same as asking that C1 and C2 tilde is the center of something?
Oh, I wanted to write down some equivalent things. But that is the definition we adopt, and then we prove equivalences. First of all, you need to prove that this is an equivalence relation. That is true. It is also clear that this equivalence relation is weaker than ordinary braided equivalence. So equivalent categories are Witt equivalent. Now, if you have two modular categories, you can take the direct product and modulo equivalence. This is independent of the order. And this gives rise to a direct product on the set of Witt classes. So let's say W is the set of modular categories, modular wit equivalents. And this really is a set and not some huge class. It's actually a countable set. And this has a monoid structure. This is what I just said. If I have two wit classes, I define the product as the class of this. And this is commutative. So what we have is W is a countable abelian monoid. The unit, of course, is the trivial category vect. But now this is a group. And the inverse structure is very easy. If we have a wit class, we take one representer. And as the inverse, we define C tilde and the wit class of that. This is well defined, and it is an inverse because okay, but for a modular category C, this is the same as Z1 of C, but by very definition of W, or our equivalence relation, this is the trivial category, or the wit class. Yeah, so that is the class of vect. So we have a countable abelian group, and you can prove that it is not finitely generated. That would be too easy, and not much is about known about that group. Now, of course, every modular category that is not a Drinfeld center, and lots of them are known, all the quantum groups at root of unity give you modular categories, and most of them are not Drinfeld centers. So they define elements of the wit group. And conjecture, W is generated as a group by the wit classes of modular categories coming from quantum groups at, let me write it like that, roots of unity. This is open conjecture, but really no one has ever seen an exotic modular category that is not either a Drinfeld center or coming from a quantum group. There are lots of exotic tensor categories, like coming from subfactor constructions and so on. But if you take the Drinfeld center of such a category, you get something which is trivial in the wit group. And no one has ever seen a modular category that is exotic. So I think this is true. But proving that, of course, will be very difficult because one needs to look at the wit group somehow from the inside, which we can't do. I should perhaps say one word of history. 7 or 8 years ago, I got an email from Kitaev conjecturing that this defines an an abelian group, that one should prove a number of things. He doesn't appear as an author of the final paper. At some point, it was discovered that Drinfeld had also discovered this wit group structure, told his Russian friends, Nikšić and Ostrek, about it, so they worked on it. I got word of it, so we joined efforts, and then it turned out that Davidov had also discovered this structure, so that's how that paper arose. I should perhaps say, and that will be the last thing, equivalent notions. So this is the same as saying that C1 box times C2 is the center of something. That was actually Kitaev's original definition. But there are two other ones, and I don't want to skip those because they don't involve the Drinfeld center. Yeah? You can give equivalent definitions not involving the center. Namely, there are commutative algebras, AI in CI, so A1 in C1, A2 in C2, such that A1 mod C1, but then the dyslexic ones, is equivalent to A2 mod in C2, but again, dyslexic. And there is a last one. There exists a modular category D and commutative algebras, B1 and B2, and now both in D, such that the two given categories, C1 and C2, well, here I have a bit little space. So Ci is equivalent to Bi mod D0. So there is a modular category containing two commutative algebras such that the given categories C1 and C2 are the dyslexic modules in that bigger category D. And these last two characterizations don't involve the Drinfeld center, but instead the dyslexic modules. This is all very nice, but the structure is difficult. There has been a second paper without me, but that doesn't really talk about this Witt group, but rather about a different one, which is easier to handle. Okay, but now I should really stop. Yes. One thing which is clear from the third definition is if you have a modular category and a commutative algebra in it, then A mod C 0 is Witt equivalent to C itself. So when you look whether C contains a commutative algebra and you pass to the modular category, that gives you a smaller category. And you continue until you can't get to a smaller one. And then if you do this in steps, that's the same as finding an algebra in C and going directly to the dyslexic module categories over that. And that would be a maximal commutative algebra. The dimension of a commutative algebra in C can't be bigger than the square root of the dimension of C. And this bound is attained if and only if C is itself a Drinfeld center, because if you can do that, now you get the trivial category. So this theorem contains as a corollary the characterization of modular categories that are centers, namely as those that admit an algebra whose modular category, the dyslexic category, is trivial. But of course, even such minimum representers will not be unique. They will be unique up to Witt equivalence.
So in this last equivalent definition, what relates B1 and B2?
Well, you can find such B1 and B2 such that C1 and C2 are both module categories, of course, the B1 modules and the B2 modules in D. That is the relation. Yeah, I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, I see they're both in D, right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, okay. In terms of a picture, you can have a category C and you go to two new categories by looking at the A1 modules and the A2 modules. Yeah, so here you have A1 mod 0 and you have A2 mod 0. And then these two things will be Witt equivalent. And the situation in the third equivalence is different. You have C1 and C2, but you go to the same other braided category by taking different algebras.
Mm-hmm. What breaks down if you try to define this equivalence for graded center categories that aren't modular?
Well, this is only true for modular categories. The Drinfeld center of a modular category is just the direct product. Yeah? But if C is not modular, you can still have Z1 of C, and you have these two functors, C, F1 and F2, but then the images will intersect, which they don't do if C is modular. Of course, then you can still talk about tensor products over some sub thing, and you might try to use that, but I think it would boil down to looking at the modularization of your modular category and then looking at the Witt class of that thing. Yeah, of course, I ignored the super aspect that always arises if your symmetric category has fermionic objects. Yeah. But this is the point where you use modularity, nowhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you have still a monoid structure, but whether it's very useful is not so clear.
Is
there a natural physical interpretation for these commutative algebras?
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you have a conformal field theory, T, for example, then you can look at local extensions, or people call it conformal extensions, and there is a bijection between finite local extensions and algebras A, commutative algebras, in the representation category of T. Yeah? The representation category of a rational conformal field theory is a modular category. You can look at the algebras in it, and the commutative algebras in that category are in bijection with the conformal extensions. This also means that if you have a conformal field theory and a conformal extensions, the two representation categories will be Wittig equivalent.
Yeah? And if A mod C0 is trivial, what is that?
Well, it means that your conformal field theory admits an extension that has trivial representation category. This is a non-trivial property, which is maybe true or not. And these are precisely the conformal field theories who have a quantum double as representation category. Yeah, and such things, of course, are known. This Witt thing is also relevant for the business of studying modular invariance in conformal field theory, but I don't want to.
I think that's all the time for questions for now. Thanks, speaker again.